today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
We read mail about radio.
Isn't that like dancing about architecture?
Oldie buddy goody.
That was great.
It's always fun to hear from the listeners.
Yeah. I mean,
we love that.
They're smarter than us.
They are. And that's reason number one to have them on.
The whole premise of the show, essentially.
Yes. Yeah. But I also like just the different voices. I think people get bored if it's just, you know, two guys in basements talking to each other all the time.
Yeah. I mean, my offspring have actually, beaten me up with a sock full of hammers. You know, because I talk to them.
Sock full of hammers. Wow.
It was pretty intense. Yeah, they were angry. Oh, yeah, they were really angry. They were small hammers. Yeah.
Yeah, I hope you're all right. Okay. So it's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And today we're going to feature some more listener correspondence. We have a couple of calls and a couple of emails. All right.
Sounds good.
Let's start here with Scott Isom.
Hello, Jim, Patrick, Suburbs Pod family, interns, Shadow, the bane of all cicadas on the eastern seaboard. This is Scott the Ice Poet from the suburbs of Kansas City. Today, Tim Hoffman called in about Los Lobos. I was first introduced to Los Lobos when they released the album How Will the Wolf Survive. I love that album. The song, basically the title track, How Will the Wolf Survive, I played that song over and over again. That became one of the songs, like The River by Bruce Springsteen. Anyway, I played that song over and over again. And also Kiko and the Lavender Moon. Los Lobos would be the example of where magic realism from literature crept into music, and definitely Kiko and the magic and the Lavender Mood is an example of that, where you get the dreamlike and magical quality of magic creeping in reality, and how what is real and what is magic and how they mix together. And that quality in Latin literature, Latin music, Los Lobos does that so well. And the earlier era of Los Lobos is what drew me in, the neighborhood in Kiko, and especially that first album that I was telling you about, How Will the Wolf Survive? I've been a fan of theirs for years. I was lucky enough to see them play several times in Columbia, and they were just they were almost a mariachi band, but they were so much more standing there with the huge guitars and just their huge presence on a little stage. They just dominated. They were massive, but beautiful. The way they could fill up a stage and fill up a tiny space and make it an arena. They were amazing. They still do it. You gotta love them. And you can take any three of their albums and you get something entirely different as they continually evolve and continually make great stuff. Loved it. Great show. Thank you.
Oh, well, there you go. I don't know that I need to say much else. Scott, I think, summed up the band pretty well.
Yeah, really well, Jim. And I love the comparison that Scott made to magical realism, which is a movement in literature originally, right? And I think the root of that is a book called 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel Garcia Marquez. I don't know if you've read it, but it's a great book. It tells the story of a family that just goes down in many generations, and crazy stuff happens, like a river of blood runs, you know, up a mountain and stuff like that. And it's right. Kind of that same kind of magical realism that Scott is talking about in Los Lobos. And I think it's a really great observation, man. It's just stories carried through time that they understood through just generations of music, and also trying to stay true to you know, what they were. And I think one of the great achievements of Los Lobos is that they stayed so true while still being on a major label and still being, you know, by many people held up as an example of, oh, these are, you know, Hispanic rockers, or, you know, they're traditional musicians, like whatever the media wanted to paint them as. They never got too caught up in that, right? They just kept playing their own kind of stuff, doing good deals and making a career out of what they did. Yet they could still, you know, play a bonfire down in a, you know, a gully and play and have everyone dancing to like weird traditional tunes. So yeah, great call from Scott. Yeah. Thank you, Scott, man. Good to hear your voice.
I really enjoy hearing the love for Los Lobos. It's not the first time on this podcast.
Totally.
But, people really do connect with that band, and that's great because we think the world of them as well. All right.
Yeah, and if you can see them, you know, anytime, it's one of those things. To me, you know, Jim, it's like seeing, you know, I took my kids to see Dylan once because I was like, you got to see this guy, you know, in person. So if you can go see Los Lobos, please don't pass up the chance, no matter when it is.
Standing in the pouring rain, all alone in a world that's changed, running scared now, forced to hide in a land where he once stood with pride. But he'll find his way by the morning light.
Now, we did an episode with Rob Gates a little while ago on remembering like radio stations from our youth. Remember that, right?
Yep.
Of course, that got a lot of correspondence. So let's start here with a call.
Cool.
Hey, Jim, Patrick, interns, suburbs, faithful, as well as everybody's pets. This is Kevin Clement from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I was calling to chime in about radio stations. The episode that y'all had recently in Baton Rouge, we're basically a radio desert. I mean, it's always been that way. We never had an AOR station. We had two top 40 stations. One was WFMF and the other one was Z98.1. And on WFMF, well, on the morning show, had a guy by the name of Gymnasium. And as you can tell from the name, it was real, you know, highbrow comedy on that show. And one thing he would do is put, for the upcoming LSU football game, he would put together clips from recent songs and would basically act like he's interviewing the LSU coach or the opposing team's coach, and would use these as kind of, you know, jokes, very poor ones. But that was basically the entertainment that we had growing up, until in high school, Z98 turned into a classic rock station. And that's what pretty much blew our minds. There were a few bands that I heard about from people who lived up north that moved down to Baton Rouge and would introduce me to, you know, bands like Rush and things like that. But, you know, when Z98.1 became Eagle 98.1, then we really, you know, got to find some good classic rock, and that kind of broadened my mind from there. So, and now, that's pretty much the way it stands. So that's why I don't listen to the radio. So, all right. Well, thank you, fellas. Hope everyone is doing well, and talk to you later. Bye.
All right. Good call there from Kevin.
Jim, I just want to ask you, just to clear the air here. You've never worked professionally under the name Gymnasium, have you? I mean, there's every time to confess it. That's right. You know, it would be now.
Yeah, it was a dark time, Patrick. And I don't want to get into that.
I was living down in Louisiana. Things were not going good.
But I'll tell you something. The shtick that the guy had where he would do these like fake interviews with like song clips.
Yeah.
That was that was done famously in a novelty tune called Mr. Jaws in the 70s.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember this.
That. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's extremely hokey.
Yeah.
But
it's terrible. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think Gymnasium was the originator of that particular form of humor.
Let's hope not. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. So he took a bad shtick and made it worse, I think, is what we're trying to say.
And you can't trace him anymore. So
no, that's right. No, he's gone.
All right. Thanks, okay. Kevin. Good to hear from him. Jim, I got to say this about Kevin Clement. Once he played a song with my band, and it was incredible. And that's all I have to say. I'd love to sign him to a long-term thing, but we can't get in touch with his people. And
yeah,
also, we don't have any money. So
he's the wizard of the washboard.
That's right.
Yes, sir. Okay, let's see here. Couple of emails. I'll read them real quickly. Let's see here. Peter Nordgren from Cornucopia. Beautiful.
Cornucopia, Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. Emailed and said, thanks for sharing old radio memories. As an old radio station guy, formerly a manager, programmer, and engineer, I have a few comments to share. He says, I worked in college, commercial, and public radio stations in the 1970s. I can assure you we were paying music license fees to ASCAP, BMI, and probably also CSAC. The methods of calculating the fees have changed, but stations continue to pay. Okay, I'm going to take a time out here. I think I was the one who said radio stations don't pay royalties to play the songs.
Yeah.
What I meant to say, because I went and looked this up after I got this email here, after we got this email, they don't pay all the royalties. They pay like, and now I've already forgotten, they pay either the publishing or the mechanical, but not both.
Right.
Is right. How it works. Okay. Right. So they do pay some royalties, but not, you know, as much as others may have to pay for use of songs.
Yeah,
so,
totally, anyway. Man. And mechanical royalties, for those who don't know, are left over from the jukebox days. Like, you know, there would be a lot of places where you could hear a song, you know, that you heard on the radio or you know, your friends are talking about or you couldn't afford, you know, whether in a jukebox, in a diner or, you mm-hmm. know, in a nightclub or something like that. Or, you know, sometimes on the radio, there would be, you know, a place where, you know, it would be played and they could play the whole song or it'd be part of a sponsored broadcast, you know, by like, you know, White's Biscuits or whatever the thing is on Oh Brother, We're Out There, right? You know, Papio Daniel Flower Hour, whatever. And they would, you know, there'd be some kind of money involved in that. But, you know, there were ways, you know, to hear that song. So I think it's all really interesting, Jim, right? About how royalties and you know, musicians got themselves paid, you know, even back then. And I'll tell you an interesting thing. We were walking the dogs recently and we, you know, had an adoptee dog that we were trying to, you know, help. And we walked in our neighborhood, Jim, and there was a house concert going on in the backyard, right? And so we were walking the dogs. There was obviously a band playing. There was cars parked all along this block where they're, you know, never normally parked and all that. And my daughter, my youngest offspring, said, that's Blackbird, Dad, by the Beatles that they're playing. And I was like, oh, my God, it is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing to me how something like that, right, you know, gets transferred down through the generations, no matter royalties or all that. It just becomes, you know, one of those things that somehow people, you know, tend to keep alive. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that's great. Okay.
Am I still talking?
So it looks like the... Okay, so yeah, ASCAP, BMI, and CSAC, those are publishing rights. So that goes to the songwriters is how that works.
Oh, okay.
They basically, the radio stations just get like a blanket license by paying some... based on some formula to those, and then they can play the music.
Right.
Right? And then they probably have to keep logs on what they play and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, so the songwriters at least get paid. But I don't think the performers do from radio airplay. But anyway, I knew it was some way that they weren't... Radio had some kind of deal that others did not have. Anyway, so there you go. Okay, so let me get back to the email from Peter. Okay. So now he goes on to say that, this had to do with how some radio stations would reach farther distances at night. He says, AM radio stations can't bounce their signal off the ocean, but their daytime coverage benefits from a damp location for the transmitting tower.
Hmm.
Even more from a tower near salt water. The ground wave used in the daytime relies on good electrical conductivity of the earth. At night, the sky wave... bounced off the ionosphere provides the AM signal at even greater distances. That's why most AM stations used to reduce power or go off the air at night to reduce skywave interference with the small number of high-powered clear channel stations, nearly all located in major cities. All right, so there is science involved here that's beyond my comprehension.
Totally makes sense, though. Yeah, I mean, you used to hear about the Grand Ole Opry being a huge influence because it was a clear channel station, right?
Right.
Right, Jim? And also Wolfman Jack and all that. But, you know, like Dylan in Minnesota could get the Grand Ole Opry on Saturday night when he was, you know, 1960 or whatever. So it's amazing.
But there really is some scientific reason why the waves travel farther at night than during the day, I just thought it was black magic. Okay.
That's why I used to go every Saturday night, park on a hill by the Roy Rogers, and I would tune my AM radio to pick up the Pittsburgh Pirates games because I knew a bookie in Pittsburgh, you know, this is back in the 70s.
There you go.
Yeah, it was like 71. I was betting on Stargell and those guys. Yeah.
Okay. Let's see here. Peter says, when I was growing up in rural northern Wisconsin, my favorite radio station was the Mighty 1090.
Oh, yeah.
Clear channel KAAY from Little Rock.
Sweet.
Their Clyde Clifford's Beaker Street show from 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. featured music heard nowhere else.
Wow.
King Crimson, Allman Brothers, early Fleetwood Mac, Rotary Connection, and many others now well known as classic rock. Clyde is still on the air today, still spinning Deep Purple and Uriah Heep, as well as some newer favorites in the same spirit. He can be heard every Friday from 8 to midnight on a regional FM network. Also streaming at ArkansasRocks.com and BeakerStreetSetlist.com. I tune in often for a trip back to 1970.
Wow.
There you go.
That's amazing.
Peter Norgren in beautiful cornucopia. Yeah. So that's cool.
Sir, we looked up your internet browsing records, and we're going to admit this is evidence. You've been on ArkansasRock.com for many months.
The only thing we have left here is also on this topic. BJ Bonin wrote in and he said, seriously, I wrote a song about this.
What?
And it's about the long gone Rev 105, I guess is the radio station. And he wrote a song called Radio. His band Demolition Means Progress.
Oh,
so we'll play that. We'll do that on the playout. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And I'll say this to BJ Bonin, power to you, sir, and power to everyone who believes in the spirit of radio.
There you go. Okay, now, before we do the playout song here that from BJ's band, we could also mention that this is still a work in progress. We're working on it, but Rockin' the Suburbs Radio is coming soon. Coming soon.
You went there. This is happening, Jim.
Yeah.
We're actually working on this. I've been in some private conversations with some people who like to troll me about Phil Collins, but we've been working on how you can do a radio show, and this could be a thing, people. We need to potentially keep a 24-hour radio show on the air for the unemployable, alcoholics, angry loners, and other people like that.
That's right. That's right. That's our mission. That's in the mission statement, I think, right?
That's
on the
right.
business plan. No, but seriously, coming to a mobile device or web browser near you, Rocking the Suburbs Radio, 24 hours of something. We're still figuring that out.
An all-night music, jukebox come near
mostly
you.
Mostly music, but other stuff too. And
it's gonna
you'll be able
happening.
To hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be happening. Yeah.
So
there's
stay
no
tuned,
doubt about it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm back, Jim. And since I've been away, I've been ready to get this radio station going. So I've been eating a lot of bacon and trying to figure it out.
You're going to play, I think your show, we have you down to play The Complete Works of the Fall.
Backwards.
I think that's what your show is going to be. Yeah, there you go.
The first guy to ever examine the fall backwards. Yeah.
There you go. Okay, let's
that's
get
enough.
Out of here.
Yeah.
Yep. If anybody does want ever want to comment on the show, the way you can do that is call 612-440-1984. Yep, or email rock@suburbspod.com or find us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram @suburbspod and sign up for the newsletter. That'd be a good way to get information about the upcoming radio station.
Yeah,
so
pretty much every Friday it comes out.
Yeah,
you know,
pretty much.
The features vary. Yeah, but it happens.
Go to suburbspod.com and click on newsletter and sign up there.
Yep.
And like I said, we'll keep you posted on the new radio station, and you can also find out about that on our social media as well. So, okay. All right, let's get out of here. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll talk to you all later.
Later, bro.
It was a dark time, Patrick, and I don't want to get into that.